The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. For several programs now, we have been reviewing portions of a book written by Luther Sunderland entitled Darwin's Enigma, and have been looking in particular at a section where he is discussing the idea of the origin of life. On our last program, we had looked at an illustration, the Encyclopedia Britannica giving a figure for the number of bits of information in a single bacterial cell, a single E. coli cell. That figure was 10 to the 12th. 10 to the 12th is 1 trillion. I made a comment, I think, on the last program. I am not convinced any sane person derives any real understanding of what 1 million is. And yet we toss around figures that really don't convey anything sensible to us. Now, we can fuss over whether a person really comprehends a million or not. How much is a trillion? Well, 1,000 million. 1,000 million would be 1 billion. 1,000 billion would be 1 trillion. Now, again, I don't know whether that conveys anything that you can handle, anything that is helpful, anything that is understandable or not. But when we get to this level, numbers, I think, for the most part, cease to have any value. We're talking about such large numbers, the human mind can't conceive of the reality of those numbers. But we also read then a comment by Carl Sagan, who made the observation that the number of letters in all of the books in the world's largest library would be approximately 1 trillion. The point being that the number of bits of information in a single prokaryotic cell, a cell without a nucleus such as E. coli, would be the same as the number of letters in all of the books in the world's largest library. Now, that ought to be sufficient at least to establish that this is a big number. There are lots of bits of information in that cell, and by no stretch of the imagination can that cell be considered as simple, except as it is compared with other cells which have nuclei. And the idea somehow that this kind of cell could simply have come into existence by itself as a consequence of random and chaotic manipulation of matter, simple, non-living atoms and molecules, in my opinion, is not just unlikely or improbable, it simply is impossible. This kind of order and pattern could not possibly have come into existence except as a consequence of the action by an intelligent creator. Now, let's continue with Sunderland's discussion here. It is interesting to note how prominent population geneticist and outspoken evolutionist Professor John Maynard Smith treated the origin of first life in his 1982 book, Evolution. Evolution Now, which was supposed to be a report on the latest research relating to validating evolutionary theory. Instead of producing an explanation of how life might have started from non-living chemicals, he began his speculations with an enzyme that has only been observed to come from a living cell. I hope you understand at least the irony of that. Rather than explaining where the first cell came from, he starts off with a part of a cell that at present can be brought into existence only by other living cells. Of course, he thought that an enzyme might somehow form spontaneously from other chemicals, but he did not produce any mathematical calculation showing the probability of this occurring in 4.6 billion years. Fred Hoyle's calculation showed that this simply could not be expected to happen in even 20 billion years. And with oxygen present in the early atmosphere, it would have been an even greater impossibility. Now again, the usual evolutionary age for the Earth is 4.6 billion years. You take the figures that Hoyle came up with, and his conclusion was that this could not have happened in 20 billion years, five times the age that is usually given for the age of the Earth. Now, as we will see later, this kind of thing, something that could not happen within this universe during its existence, is something that is not improbable. It is something simply that cannot happen. Now, I realize that comment makes statisticians squirm a little bit, but I still think it is a reasonable statement. Fred Hoyle's calculation showed that this simply could not be expected to happen in even 20 billion years. And with oxygen present in the early atmosphere, it would have been an even greater impossibility. We've talked about that before. I'll not repeat all of that now. Anyway, Stephen Jay Gould says there would have been far less time than 4.6 billion years for this highly improbable event to have occurred. He says, we are left with very little time between the development of suitable conditions for life on the Earth's surface and the origin of life. Life apparently arose about as soon as the Earth became cool enough to support it. So the evolutionist doesn't have the 4.6 billion years to tinker with. If you're aware of their usual view of the Earth, early Earth was simply a blob of super hot stuff. It cooled over a period of billions of years, at least hundreds of millions of years. And life certainly would not have been possible on the surface of such an Earth at that time. So Gould's comment is a legitimate one. The latest speculation is that life was present less than 1 billion years after the formation of the Earth. So you're looking at 3.6, 3.4, somewhere in that neighborhood. Fred Hoyle wrote in November 1981, New Scientist, that there are 2,000 complex enzymes required for a living organism. Now listen to the next comment here. But not a single one of these could have formed on Earth by random shuffling processes in even 20 billion years. Now, we can fuss over the figures. Whether they're precise or not, I do not know. The notion is that there are 2,000 enzymes, 2,000 protein molecules with their included amino acid components, and in most cases, many cases, other things, other ions, calcium or metallic ions or other organic molecules, 2,000 of these that are necessary in order for a single cell to exist. And Hoyle's conclusion was that even one of those 2,000 could not have come into existence during 20 billion years, five times the age of the Earth. Hoyle's comment now. I don't know how long it is going to be before astronomers generally recognize that the combinatorial arrangement of not even one among the many thousands of biopolymers on which life depends could have been arrived at by natural processes here on the Earth. Now, the biopolymers, bio simply means a chemical that is found in living things, synthesized there. Polymer refers to a large molecule made up of repeating units of some kind, such as a protein or a DNA molecule or whatever. Now, let me repeat the sentence, please. This is Hoyle's comment. I do not know how long it is going to be before astronomers generally recognize that the combinatorial arrangement of not even one among the many thousands of biopolymers on which life depends could have been arrived at by natural processes here on the Earth. Astronomers will have little difficulty in understanding this because they will be assured by the biologists that it is not so. The biologists have been assured in their turn by others that it is not so. The others are a group of persons who believe quite openly in mathematical miracles. Now, I don't know whether you followed all that he's saying here. If you know anything about the specialization involved in attaining terminal degrees, PhDs, a person who has one of those knows a great deal about a little bit. And if he persists in studies, he can add to his personal knowledge as a result of his research for his degree in a particular area. I happen to be an entomologist. I would like to think I know something about insects. I have taught a variety of biology courses for more than 40 years. So I think I know a little bit about animals, less about plants, etc. Now, astronomers, a person who is an astronomer really doesn't have that knowledge, as I don't have the specific knowledge about astronomy. And what Hoyle is saying is that astronomers are assured by biologists that this idea, this statement that a single enzyme could not have come into existence in 20 billion years is not so. Well, what is the basis for the biologist to say that it's not so? And we go back again to the idea, oh, there's so many planets, so many chemical processes, it just has to happen. Now let me continue with Hoyle's comment. The others are a group of persons who believe quite openly in mathematical miracles. Now, do evolutionists accept miracles? Yes, they do. They are miracles that do not involve a creator, but they are mathematical miracles. And that term might be worth our pursuing. I won't do it. Hoyle continues, they advocate the belief that tucked away in nature, outside of normal physics, there is a law which performs miracles, provided the miracles are in the aid of biology. This curious situation sits oddly on a profession that for a long time has been dedicated to coming up with logical explanations of biblical miracles. Now, this is a very interesting observation by Hoyle. I think he is exactly on target with it. While evolutionists would reject the idea of biblical miracles, it is necessary that they derive their own miracles outside the possibility of Scripture and a creator.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.